Blog Talk Radio.
Allow me to introduce myself. Who knows what dastardly crime might perpetrate next?
He's a very clever arch criminal who must be put away. Another innocent victim of the idle maniac.
Hello, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Mrs. Watson.
Is
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Voice of the People. It's the Sixth Man, Dean Geronimo, and I'm in the studio with my man, Mark Lee. Mark, what's good with you?
Hey, not much. I'm just sitting here chilling, watching a little bit of TV and enjoying a little bit of cooler weather in the lovely state of North Carolina, because, you know, we were scorching there earlier, but we had a little rain today and a little rain for the next few days, so we're just sitting here chilling because it's back in the 70s, which is some pleasant temperatures.
I hear that, man. We had like 60 degrees here in Jersey. We too had a blazer last week for a couple of days, going into the 90s, and then all of a sudden, it just got cool again.
I do not mind cool. I don't know about you, but I don't mind cool at all. Cool is a good thing.
Well, cool is always a good thing, brother. You know, I can't complain at all, man, so...
It would not do any good to complain whatsoever. I do have a question for you because I was sitting there looking at the news and I saw that our good buddy, Mr. Trump, went down to over there in the Muslim countries, and I guess he was trying to tell them to clean out their own house and to get rid of their extremists. And as I was reading that, I was thinking to myself, I was like, wait a minute. Aren't there like groups like Klan and other hate groups here in the U.S. that we haven't got rid of?
Man, they've been here since the beginning, man. He ain't even trying to talk to them. But you could go tell somebody else to clean up their house when your house is trashy. Oh, really, man? Get out of here. Be lucky they didn't behead him real quick like we have your leader. Oh, no, y'all keep him.
Yeah, because there are a lot of folks around the USA that probably been like, you can keep him because, you know, I heard that there were about 100 students that Mr. Spence went to a university that, you know, it's not exactly the most, it's got some liberals, it's got some conservatives, but I wouldn't put it as one of the most, I wouldn't put it as Berkeley, but about 100 students walked out in Notre Dame because they were like, nah, we don't want to hear you, Pence. You crazy, your boss is crazy, so we walking out.
And you know what? That's the way you protest with it, man. Instead of sitting there booing the people and going back and forth and all of that, they say, you know what? Let's just be, we could be the most disrespectful thing ever. As soon as he takes the mic, we just going to get up, we're going to walk clean out this door, and we don't have nothing to say. You know, we don't have anything that we want to say. We don't want to hear anything you have to say, but we're going to let you know that we don't appreciate you, and we're going to walk out.
Just going to walk right out that door. We just going to head out the door and be like, hey, howdy.
We ain't trying to, yeah, bye, man. We ain't trying to hear nothing you saying. You could have been giving us a free education, paid for and everything. We don't even want to deal with that.
We do not want to deal with you at all. You just got, so we just going to leave you alone and you can do whatever you want to.
Yeah, you can talk for hours if you want. We're not going to be here.
We're going to be sitting home, probably had a fifth or something, and we're just going to be sitting here chilling because we didn't want to hear what you had to say in the first place.
Right. We, hell with you, man. Get out of here.
Just got to bounce. You got to bounce.
Right. Right. That's crazy,
just the way. Yeah, well, you know, the world is crazy. I also saw that one of the issues that we dealt with, and, you know, it has a little bit of repercussion, but we're not going to talk about that. One of the issues that we dealt with last week is in the news again today because the military has got to make a decision on its gender policy.
Oh, wow.
It says a top Pentagon official has called on the civilian and uniform leaders of the armed services to report on their plans to begin accepting new transgender troops by July 1, according to a memo obtained by USA Today. Last year, the Pentagon rescinded its ban on transgender troops, allowing them, those in uniform, to serve openly. Policy established under Defense Secretary Ash Carter in the Obama administration also called for the services to develop plans to educate troops about transgender issues and accept enlisted recruits and officer candidates by this summer.
Well, hey, man, you ain't going to stop it. People are going to feel the way that they feel, and you're going to have to learn to accept different things and be a little open-minded to, you know, things that are going on. Hey, we don't like 90% of the things that happen with us, but we've learned to accept it. We've learned to overcome it. And it's not even overcoming. I say when you accept it and you understand that people have their differences and you have to respect whatever differences there may be, whether you agree with it or not. And from there, you know, maybe we can move forward to all understanding each other and getting along, and it won't be so jacked up. You know what I mean?
I agree with you. I mean, I'm sure that the majority of them, if a foreign power came into the country, they probably would want to defend it just like anybody else would. So I think that, you know, it don't matter whether a person is black, white, purple, swinger or not, gay or straight, I think that at the end of the day, everybody just kind of like trying to make sure that their house is protected and that they're okay.
The house is protected. And if I'm in a jam, I ain't really trying to ask you, do you like black people? Are you gay, straight, whatever? I'm saying help me, man. I need help. And if you're there to help me, God bless you. If you ain't there to help me, keep it moving.
Yeah, but you did, I'm sure in the I have brothers that did military, including some that served in campaigns. I did not go into the military, and I don't think you did either, but I definitely know you got friends that did. And all I know is that in the foxhole, I don't really think all they care about is, one, getting out of that foxhole in one piece, and two, I don't think there was a lot of questions as to whether you were gay, straight, Muslim, Christian, from here or from another planet, Cancer or
nothing.
Virgo. I don't think you get that.
Brother, I work in law enforcement. I tell you this, as long as you got my back, I give a damn what you are. What you do on your own time is your own business. And as long as we stay alive to enjoy more days, that's what it's about. You know, that's the biggest thing. And a lot of times, we lose sight of the bigger picture because we got our own little 19-inch TV in front of us, and that tunnel vision is the only thing we end up looking at, and we end up doing more harm than good, you know. Ladies and gentlemen that are listening all across the world, you are listening to the Voice of the People. It's co-host Mark Lee, the sixth man Dean Geronimo here on the line. Give us a call if you want to talk to us. Area code 646-668-8393.
Yeah, please give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. We are always open to hearing great conversation from our listeners and seeing what they got going on. And, you know, speaking of, I know that Ty loves hearing about entertainment news, and we've talked about this before, but I understand that even though we have one going on in D.C., a whole other circus, but the official Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus officially closed their doors on yesterday. Sunday was the apparently last performance in Uniondale. Because there's a picture that I'm looking at with a big cat trainer, and he's it's on Sunday was the final day of the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus in Uniondale, New York. The circus ran for 146 years.
Golly. 146. I'm just trying to process that number. So you think since what? 1870?
Let's see, this is 1970. Yeah, about that time. So we're talking, the circus was running around a little bit after the Civil War.
Wow. And now it's over.
It is history.
That's a big blow to the circus entertainment world, but it opens the door now for Universal Circus and any other circus entertainment that is looking to come on in and keep that thing going, you know?
That's right. They can keep the destiny going. As a matter of fact, they have moved. They used to go to Walnut Creek here in Durham, which is an amphitheater, and I was talking to a friend of mine. I think that they're actually moving to a different venue. I can't remember whether it's Greensboro or another, like, Coliseum, but their longtime venue that they were at in Raleigh, they moving to a different one. So that, and that one might actually be a little bit bigger, so they might be trying to expand to cover some of that, like you said, cover some of that lost ground that the Ringling Brothers has got. But, you know, no matter what circus you got to deal with the, because I know Universal has run it, but as well, you got to deal with those animal rights activists that are sitting there going like, wait a minute, you're whipping my lion.
Yeah. Wow. Good gracious, man. Wow. That's just, Did you hear about the young brother that, he was a cancer patient, man, and his dying wish was to receive his high school diploma. And he died after receiving that thing, man. They said during a special ceremony this past week, Jerome Singleton received his diploma while surrounded by family, friends, faculty, and nurses. Hold on. It just clicked off. That's the wild thing about social media. It flips on you. You know what I mean? But
he had not seen his... I mean, did he see the diploma when he got it, or he hadn't seen it since? He never saw it?
Well, he got to see it because they had a special ceremony for him with family, friends, faculty, and his nurses. So everyone present had been by the 17-year-old's side during his battle with an aggressive form of cancer known as rhabdomyosarcoma, or RMS. His family says receiving his diploma was his dying wish, and high school granted him an early diploma after his family told the school he wouldn't make it to his graduation ceremony just days away. Once he got toward the end, when it got real weak, we did a lot of talking, said Jerome Cochran, the boy's father. All he talked about was wanting to graduate. He was first diagnosed in March 2016 and spent the past year traveling between Baton Rouge and Memphis for a total of 47 chemo treatments. The treatment seemed to be working until about 47. He said the treatment seemed to be working until about 6 weeks ago when the family received the devastating news, where they told him that medically there was nothing else that they could do and that hospice was available. They told him he could still do chemo, but he will always have cancer, and that's something no 17-year-old wants to hear. So he was referred to his family by an old soul. He made the decision on his own to stop chemo and move into hospice care at home. His father said he's at peace knowing his son achieved the goal he's had since he was a little boy. The closer you are to your kids, the more you can accept the bad things if they get worse, Jerome's father said. Because you know that you did everything you could for them, and you won't have any regrets. Now, they do have a GoFundMe page. They needed like 11,000, I think, to I don't know if it's for funeral expenses or for whatnot, but they're like at 8,100 right now. You know, and peace and blessings to the family of Jerome Singleton from us here at the Voice of the People. So,
yeah, we definitely got to send our prayers out to that family and all of that. So that's going through a lot to have to fight any kind of cancer. I know some folks that have dealt with that. That's actually part of what, from what my understanding is, Bobby Tuck was, as I told y'all on last week's show, passed away, and his funeral, because they're expected to be a big one, won't be for another 2 weeks. It'll be on the 2nd with the wake and the 3rd with the funeral. But that's, I'm understanding correctly, it was liver cancer that took him out. So, yeah, anytime that you've got these ailments, you need to go ahead and check yourself. If you think you got symptoms, go ahead and take care of those, because prevention and finding out early is the most important part of these kind of things. So you think you got some symptoms, you probably need to go ahead and take a look at them.
Right. And definitely, man.
So, you know, one of the other things came up in the news was they were talking about, which is right up your alley, and I've had this conversation with some friends of mine that do activism work, the whole thing of knowing your rights with the law. You know, we got these people that are doing these kinds of resistance and, of course, just being in the wrong neighborhood. And I was wondering,
right,
in your opinion, you're in law enforcement, how many people actually know their rights when the police come and come to them, whether it's for a traffic stop or for them being suspected of drugs or whatever? How many people do you actually think, being a member of law enforcement, actually know their rights and what they should do in those situations?
I'm going to say very few, brother, because, you know, honestly, television has gotten, and media and movies, they messed up a whole lot of people with the perception of what to do when, you know, accosted by the police officers or whatever. A lot of people will say, I have a right to do this, and I have a right to that, I have a right to freedom of speech, I can say what I want to say, blah, blah, blah. But one of the first things that people are told when they are arrested, especially when they're arrested, when they're Mirandized, the very first statement says, you have the right to remain silent. Anything, not something, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. So,
right,
you know, folks get in their feelings, man, and they get to talking, and they say too much. Next thing you know, those things are regurgitated and used against them. Well, they told you right there, anything you say can and will be used against you. And here you go, I have the right to go here, and I have the right to go there, and you can't tell me this, and this. All right, well, you know what? At some point, you're going to have to learn, shut up. If you get pulled over, answer the questions that are given to you. Now, some of the questions are setup questions, especially at traffic stops when they're doing the drunk stops, you know, just monitoring people to see if anyone has been drinking or driving under the influence. The first setup question is, all right, good evening, Mr. Lee, how you doing? Oh, I'm doing okay. Have you had anything to drink tonight? Most people's brains say liquor, so they say no. Now when you're answering, if you have been drinking and you're telling a lie, I can smell it on your breath because you made one of them sounds with your mouth. So you just blew my face and I can smell the liquor. It's like, you sure you didn't have anything to drink? Well, you know what? All right, I drank a beer. Okay, then, you lied to me. You know, like, and depending on the officer, and it's a two-way street, because depending on the officer, you know, he can give you that breathalyzer, and if you are under the legal limit, he can let you go, you know. But then if it goes somewhere else, which now you've had something to drink during the day, water, juice, coffee, tea, you've had something to drink. So for me to you to tell me you have not drink, you didn't have anything to drink all day, you should be getting on a point of dehydration. You know what I mean? But then it goes, you have people who answer that way, and on the flip side, you have those who just are rude with everybody. It doesn't matter who it is. They believe that with that badge, they can fly. They believe that with that badge, they can walk on water. So when you have those two worlds collide, it is a horrible situation. Because now you have an officer who believes that I am the final answer, which you're not, because the judge has to determine fault or guilt or innocence. But when they're out here and there's nobody monitoring you when you're out there, there's nobody monitoring you, you know, you get to say some things, and if people don't report it, you get to keep saying it, and you figure that your strength grows because I'm the police and I can do what I want. Well, that has dire consequences to it as well. But as far as the general public, you know, it's best that, can I see your license registration? Here in New Jersey, we got to give up license registration and insurance. Pass it off, say nothing. You start going into, well, I was just They don't want to hear all that, man. Don't dig yourself a hole that you got to fight to get out of. You know, like, give it to them. Do you know why I stopped you? No, I did not. You might know damn well you were speeding. You saw that speed limit sign say 40 miles an hour. You came through there at 65. You didn't see the speed trap because you were speeding. You weren't paying attention to that. All right, you may know that, but at the same time, he didn't ask you anything but, do you know why I stopped you? If you do, go ahead and be honest. Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry, I was going through that. Now, what you say after that? You had to go to the bathroom or whatever. It depends on, again, it's the officer's discretion. You know what I mean? He can give you a warning. He can give you a reduced ticket. He can give you reckless driving. But it comes off as an interaction where you have to learn to play the game smarter than they're trying to play it. And it's not getting over. It's just being human. All right, get out your feelings. You were speeding. Okay. If you know it, I'm sorry. Officer, I had to do this or that, you know. And then shut up. Don't start giving your life story. Nobody wants to hear all of that. You know, nobody cares.
You're right.
You're
absolutely right. That's the way most people handle it. And that's actually what the article, because it was actually an editorial that I was reading, and that's what they said. It said most people don't know how to handle themselves during a police encounter. They know they have constitutional rights, but they also know they can get into trouble by disobeying an officer. Not knowing where the lines are drawn, the vast majority of people lean towards to whatever the police want. And then later on it says, Tim's along with some of what you were saying. It says later on in the article, says, that's because the law enforcement have us at a serious disadvantage does not mean we should let them walk all over us. The wise course to take during police encounters is to obey commands, but to also politely and calmly, which you were just talking about, decline requests. Here's the key point. Law enforcement are trained to blur the distinction. For example, they may knock on your door and say, let's talk. In such cases, individuals have to seek clarification by asking, are you ordering me to open my door and allow a search? If it isn't an order, the choice is ours. If you give the police permission to search your home without a warrant, that's your prerogative. If you decline to give your permission, that's your prerogative also. Our Constitution is incapable of enforcing itself. It is just words on paper unless we calmly but firmly assert our rights, use them or lose them. And that was an editorial from Tim Lynch, who directs the Cato's Institute on Criminal Justice and serves on the board of advisors of an organization called Flex Your Right.
And you have to be very clear on to get a whole lot of clarity on what has been asked of you. All right, Mr. Lee, can I get you to step out of the car for me? All right, step out of the car, push the door closed. Do you mind if I search your vehicle? May I ask, for what reason are you conducting such search? Because now, if you say, well, what you want to search my car for, man? Then he said, well, he can make up anything. I have reason to believe that you have such and such in your car. Okay, if he has not detained you, you have the right to say no. Now, once you're detained, they have that's what falls under probable cause. Once it falls under that, he needs no warrant to search your vehicle. But he must have detained you as well. So he can't just say, yo, go step at the front of the car and I'm going to search this car. Most people get nervous when the police get like that. So they say, you know what, can I get you to step over there for me? Listen, you mind if I search your vehicle? No, I don't mind. Next thing you know, oh, yeah, your homeboy was in the car last week and he dropped a bag of weed by accident. You ain't pay no attention because you don't ride in the back, but now here you go. You got possession of marijuana charge. Just that easy. I'm not saying, it's just giving an example, you know. Right, and that's just an example of what could happen. I know it's an if, but at the same time, if you haven't done anything, they have not detained you, do you mind if I search your vehicle? Why, yes, officer, I do. Now they have to produce a warrant. They got to go through the channels of getting in touch with somebody, some judge in that same jurisdiction to sign off on it, sign copy of the warrant. And it's a whole lot that goes into it. So, you know, if you say no, sometimes it's like, you know what, man, just watch the damn speed. Hurry up and get the hell where you got to go. Because they know it's a whole lot involved after, no, I do not consent to a search. But if you smell like weed, if you smell it like weed, and weed is not a cologne, so if you're out there smelling like weed, he don't have to ask you anything. He has the probable cause for the scent of the marijuana. And just like that, I'm detaining you for now. I'm not arresting you. But now he can search you. He can search the car. Even if you're driving somebody else's car, they can search that car now. And it becomes a whole big mess, you know, because we're out here and we think the Constitution says freedom of speech. We take those three words and we run.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to be careful because freedom of speech has gotten a lot of people hemmed up, especially when they threaten public officials and you know, politicians and all of that. You have the right to say what you want to say, but they also have the right to lock you the hell up. So, you know,
they got the right to get you any way they want to get you.
Right. And then, you know, people will go further. Well, I have a right to a speedy trial. Well, define speedy. You have to look at all of these different things that it sounds by definition. You say speedy trial, speedy meaning right now, but speedy could mean the speed of the court. If the court doesn't process court dates for 3, 4, 5 months, look at what you're dealing with. You know, even if you do bail out or they let you out on your own recognizance, now you have a court date, you got arrested today, and say the courts are backed up, so your court date is set for September 3rd, 9 a.m. You better write that thing on every memo, phone, notification, something, because before you know it, it'll be September 4th, and you'll be like, oh, damn, I was supposed to go to court yesterday. But guess what? Now you have a bench warrant for failure to appear. So now it gets worse. You have the original charge. You have the failure to appear in court for that charge. So now you got two charges, and you got a whole bunch of BS to deal with. So we do have to become more cognizant of what the law is. I mean, I know up here in New Jersey, we've had the forms with all the chiefs from the different municipalities in which our branch is located from the NAACP. You'll be surprised, man. It's like maybe 30 people there. 30.
Wow.
You know, and here these chiefs taking time out of, willing to talk to the people, ready for any kind of questions, concerns, gripes, or whatever. There's 30 people there. And out of the 30 people, 18 of them are branch members. So now it's almost like, dang, we're trying
to have
this thing.
You got 12 community people, real.
You got 12 people from the community. Right.
Big community like we all had a jersey, and 12 people showed up.
12 people. We almost cover, our branch almost covers 12 municipalities. So if you put it in perspective like that, one, even if they, let's just say they all came from the different, one person per municipality, that's not enough. We
that's
don't participate in the things that matter. Like, you know, oh, I'm not going to that. That's a forum for the police, man. I'm going to go sit at home and chill. I worked all day. Yeah, but you work every day, like 5 days a week, unless you work in overtime and you work more. So when are you going to take
the time to learn this information? That's one thing I will say about North Carolina. They've had a couple of forums, and they've actually been fairly well attended, and they've been forums. You know, we got a new police chief not that long ago, so she had come from the Atlanta area, so she's trying to get to know the law, the lay of the land. And they've had some forums that had some pretty good attendance, and there were both people there that were activists, even activists against the whole penal system and the mass incarceration system and things of that nature. But they were all in the same room, and some good conversation. As a matter of fact, I think Democracy Now! Is having a meeting on Wednesday. I'm not sure if the penal system is going to be one of the topics they're going to discuss, but we're going to discuss so much stuff that may come up as well as some of the other issues. But we've got like a 375-seat theater, and I guarantee you it'll probably be at least half full, if not totally full.
Okay.
So they've just been doing a good job of getting some good attendance, so that's a good thing to see.
Yeah.
Now, I've had other ones that you're talking about where they've had these same kind of forms in different other places, and only nobody showed up. Or, you know, the other thing that happens that's really bad is that sometimes when we show up, it's after a disaster has happened. We need to show up at these meetings.
Correct.
Before the disaster happens.
There'll be 300-400 deep if someone gets seriously hurt or killed. Oh, we come out for that. But
Right.
When it was come out and learn how the law works, what better person to ask? Is and in this forum, I mean, we asked some of the, you know, people were asking some of the, what may sound to me like a weird question, but to someone who doesn't know, you know, they were able to ask those questions and to get those answers from, damn, this is the chief of the police department. It's not, oh, we're going to send some officer out there to just answer questions. You actually had the chiefs of these departments there. So you got the number one man in all of these departments waiting to answer your questions, and you don't come. But then you want him to answer all of your questions as soon as Timmy gets shot. But Timmy was in the drug zone with a gun in his pocket, and the police pulled him over. He threw the gun, but he didn't throw it right down. He had waving it, and he running, or whatever it may be. As soon as something happens, we come out in force. We need to start coming out in force beforehand. The same with, you know, when folks talk about the mass incarceration. Well, the system was designed years ago. And in some ways, I believe originally it was to eliminate the black male. Because without the black male, you can't make black babies. And without black babies, you have no more black race, to look at it like that. What they did not factor in was that everybody, regardless of race, creed, or whatever, there's someone in each race with a criminal mind. So now you got all these people coming to prison. Oh, snap. We made the law so restrictive. And in some states, such as Virginia, there's still old antiquated laws on the books, such as if you have sex in anything other than the missionary position, it is a criminal offense. Wow. Like,
yep.
Really? Somebody could actually go to jail for that, you know?
Yep.
But at the same time,
those laws are still on the books.
They still have these weird laws on the books because back then, the way they viewed the world and all of that was so skewed and so narrow that they never took any of these laws off the books. Now, fast forward to present day, and a lot of us are being caught out there on little stuff first. So now it makes it hard when that law, that old law, you got hemmed up under it, is still a valid law because no one ever changed it. So now,
and some of the laws,
you have a criminal
history.
Some
of the laws are so stupid, though, because some of the laws are so
right.
stupid. I remember I had a book. I forgot the name of the book, but I think the book was actually this law that I'm getting to name. But it was a book about, like you're talking about, these obscure laws that are still on the books that were never changed. But I think the title of the book was something like, it was against the law to feed an elephant on the streets, because coming back to our earlier conversation about the circus, there were those traveling circuses and those minstrel shows and everything, and sometimes they would have, like, crazy animals come in, and somebody probably fed an elephant. The elephant probably did something like an animal would do and might have bit the child's hand, or maybe didn't even bite it, might have just snipped at it, and somebody put on the law, you cannot have this feeding of this animal on a public street. And you know, streets became much more cosmopolitan. They ain't like a lot of these traveling shows traveling just down the middle of the road. But last I said, and this book was published years ago, but last time I checked, that law was still on the books.
Oh, yeah. And when you look at some of these things, man, you're kind of like, what is, you know, it's like Alabama. The state constitution makes it illegal for any idiots or insane people to vote. Like, who's defined as an idiot? You know, Arizona, you can't feed pigs garbage unless you have a special permit. I mean,
you
what?
Can't do what?
You cannot feed pigs garbage unless you have a special permit.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Colorado, since a horse is technically a vehicle, you're not allowed to enjoy a pale ale on horseback or any booze for that matter. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
So, yeah, like Connecticut. For a pickle to legally be called a pickle, it must bounce. Really?
For a pickle to legally be called a pickle, it has to actually bounce?
It has to bounce. Now, this one, and I'm looking at this list, man, and it's a website, thrillist.com. It's like obscure laws in Georgia. Using profane language to a person under 14 in person or by telephone is considered disorderly conduct. But if that kid's 15,
that would get a whole lot of parents in trouble.
Oh, man, you talk about going straight to jail. You know, old school parents never coming out.
Yeah.
In Indiana, look, check this out. In Indiana, you cannot catch fish with your bare hands anywhere in Indiana.
So even if you got skills and you can do this, you can't do it.
Man, it's crazy. Maryland. Although the O-line state is presumably a fan of safe sex, it has a provision barring anyone from selling non-latex condoms and vending machines. So I guess you won't get them lambskins, which is over.
Yep. They go roll into your house and bust you. They go roll into your house and bust you. They got some crazy laws.
Yeah, Michigan bars you from being inebriated on a train in I-68. Of 1913.
What? Wow, so you can't even get on the train with like a little buzz.
No, and in Mississippi, you better be married when you have your kids. You can have one illegitimate child, but you'll face misdemeanor charges for a second. It's all these little weird laws.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's weird. Yeah. Like, how do they come up with this stuff? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy. In New York, if a person be a mask or in any manner disguised by unusual or unnatural attire or facial alteration, loiters, remains, or congregates in a public place with other persons so masked or disguised, then that person is a illegal loiterer unless you had a masquerade ball. Everybody
Wait a minute, back up. Wait a minute. No, but hold on a second. New York has one of the biggest Comic-Con festival conferences in the country. So you mean to tell me that all thousands of those people, because they come from all over the country, they're technically breaking the law under what you just read?
Unless it is a masquerade ball, everybody is getting arrested. And down there where you are, bro,
a masquerade ball.
Not a masquerade ball at all. Now check this out. Where you are down there in North Carolina now.
Uh-huh.
This is crazy. Stealing used kitchen grease is a crime.
Oh wow. Coming to a place and stealing your kitchen grease.
Stealing your kitchen grease, bruh. That's crazy. Like, what were they thinking? You know what I'm saying?
What were they thinking?
If you intentionally bite off your friend's arm, you will go to jail. Oh, you're going to jail anyway.
Yeah, you're going to jail anyway. Not only that, but your friend probably going to, if they get that new arm, they're going to whoop you from here to Hawaii and back.
And in my home state, I told you about the one law. And a lot of the laws were weird. Like, I told you about that one. Now, having any kind of sex if you're not married is a class 4 misdemeanor also. If convicted, you have to pay a fine up to $250. Now, isn't that paying for sex?
That would be the same as prostitution.
That's the same as paying for sex, man. I mean, I'm not sure where or what they were thinking or what they may have been smoking, bruh. When they made up,
I think it was
what
they were smoking at the time. Well, you know, you got to remember, because a friend of mine does a point when he reminds us about this every year. He's been doing it now for about two or three years. But you have to remember, the Constitution was actually written on your paper, which means that technically it was written on marijuana.
You know what they meant? You know what they did? As soon as they finished writing, they lit some up. They're like, yo, man, we had to write this whole thing. It's like long as hell, man. We need to go ahead and relax. Go and light that thing up, man. We got any more paper left? Yeah, we ain't used these 18 sheets. Hey, man, roll up.
Roll it up now.
They probably rolled it up while they were writing it. That's why some of this stuff is out like crazy, man. Like, how do you... You know what? Let me just stop for a second. Y'all, we are on the voice of the people. It's co-host Mark Lee. I'm the six-man Dean Geronimo. Give us a call, 646-668-8393, man. It's one of them days when you start talking about laws, rules, and things that just make you shake your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. They actually had a conference. We had a MOOC conference. It was held, about our school, well, MOOC celebrates the life of Robert MOOC, the synthesizer dude, and his legacy. And there was all kinds of people here. Nona Hendrix was here. Michael Stipes from REM was here. And DJ Cantaloupe, your guy that does the voices, Michael Winslow, he was here. But on the last day of the conference, which was yesterday, they actually did a conference where artists were talking about the fight against mass incarceration. It's called Music and Tech, Tools to Fight Mass Incarceration, was held in American Underground, which is like one of the premier places around here. It says, Marshall Jones, a DJ and a member of Give It the Beat, which represents the dance music community, a response to mass incarceration. And panelists, I think you might know this guy because he's a member of Ninth Wonder as well, included Fonte Coleman and Nikolai of the Foreign Exchange.
Nikolai, Fonte is actually one third of Little Brother. When that group came out, it was Ninth Wonder, Fonte, and Big Pool. Those were the three. And then when they parted, when Ninth Wonder left, it was Fonte and Big Pool. Fonte now is the writer for, if you ever watched the show The Breaks on VH1, the character Arm. He wrote those rhymes that Arm is reciting on the show.
Oh, cool.
He and Nicolay are the Foreign Exchange. So if you've never heard that music, real nice, mellow, laid-back thing, man, you can YouTube them, the Foreign Exchange. You know, I'm part of the Jammer family, so for me, all branches and extensions get the same love, you know what I mean? But if you never checked out the Foreign Exchange, Nicolay is the producer, Fonte is the MC. Nice song.
And Fonte talked to some serious interesting knowledge. He said Coleman pointed out that the arts are what gets cut from the education budget first. He ain't never lied about that. I think it's very important you've got to give kids practical skills, but it's important to give kids art and music, he said. Kids connect with art, and it's also an outlet for them. Coleman said there's one big answer for addressing mass incarceration. For me as a parent, it starts with education of kids. He tells his sons that as African-American males, they're coming up to bat with two strikes already. So they talk about music and art programs outside of school for youth. It's not the magic wand. It ain't going to save your life, but it can give kids a sense of purpose, Coleman said. And then they had some other things they were talking about. They were even talking about the whole Ban the Box movement, which I know a lot of folks were very much trying to make sure that that happened over the last couple of years, because a lot of folks said if they get caught up in the system, as you know, and if they got to check that box, a lot of employees automatically write them off. They're like, nah, you've been in the system. I ain't giving you no job.
Yeah, and here in New Jersey, they have it started in Newark. Newark was the first, Brick City was the first place in New Jersey to effectively ban the box. And now it's called the Opportunity to Compete Act. So what it does is it eliminates on any job application that had to be removed. Employers do have the right to ask, have you been convicted of a felony in an interview? But on an initial job application, they have removed that. So it gives them, at least helps individuals get their foot in the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Need to get that foot in the door sometimes, and a lot of times, you know, for them to have to carry that stigma for life, even though sometimes it was just over a matter, in a small indiscretion that got them caught up in the whole system. So, yeah, I definitely think that that whole ban the box movement is something that probably needs to go even more national, but we know Trump ain't going to be about that because he's just crazy.
Man, it's definitely needed. I mean, you know, like I said, you look at everybody has made mistakes. And if you look back, if I look back on my own life, there's some things, had I gotten caught, man, I would be right there writing letters, trying to call somebody before lockdown and see how the world's going and all of that stuff. But it's a group of individuals, I guess, at some point who believed that they were better than everybody else. So they restricted individuals who had made such mistakes even further. You never know. You know, we're all one incident from being in that same situation. And some people will tell you, no, I'm not, because of this and this. And my response to that individual was, if I were to do something to you and make you mad enough that you forget just for a second who you are and what you're supposed to be doing, you will make that mistake. And then from there, your life changes. And it only takes a minute, you know, and these individuals, once they've done their time and they come home, man, it's not on the prison system to do aftercare. It's for the community to say, you know what? All right. Well, you did that, whatever. What's your next move? What are you planning on doing next? And you know, the government should be able to assist them as well. Yeah, we on that big, oh, yeah, we got to get people off of drugs. Well, you know what? I got a quick answer for that. They going to the dealers and all of that stuff, the same as you did with alcohol. Just legalize the whole damn thing. Tax it. And then you're able to give those that's coming home, you can take the same money, pay down some of the debt that we owe because we keep giving people stuff and then they don't pay us back. But we keep borrowing this and we keep doing this, and every 6 to 8 months, it's almost a government shutdown until they extend the credit and all of these extra things that, you know what, just go ahead and legalize the drugs. Man. So now the dudes is coming home. You can start some programs and you know, government-funded programs, job training, teaching them trades, helping them get their education or whatever it may be, you know what I mean? With this president, no, it's not going to happen because he's like, oh, I'm making the law and order. You know, it's going to be law and order. Well, shit, man, it's been law and order, and it's been hell for people, even people, regardless of race, regardless of color, creed, orientation, any of that. It's been hard because the rules are so restrictive, and nobody is sharp enough to say, we need to get rid of this old law, these old laws, or, you know, these different things.
They got to go. And I'm going to change the topic just slightly, get off the law for a minute, but I got a question for you. Now, in your family, you're a married man. I ain't done that yet, but you're a married man. In your family, mm-hmm. who does the better job of investing, you or your wife?
You know what? We have made that thing a team thing, man, because, you know, when you try to save some money and you try to do it on your own, it don't work out too well. But we just sat down and we, you know, came up with a little plan. You say this much, I'm going to say this much. And then we break it even further. You say this for yourself, I say this for myself. Now, it's not a large amount at all, but at the same time, she has hers, I have mine, and we have ours. And that way,
supposedly,
say, you know what?
But supposedly, according to this new study that came out, because, you know, this is going to shock a lot of people, including a lot of people in Wall Street, it says that when it comes to investing success, women did better than men last year. Female investors earned higher returns and saved more of their pay to fund retirement accounts than men, even though most women didn't think they would, according to a recently released Women and Money survey from Fidelity Investment. So it was done by a banking firm. I guarantee you Fidelity is probably not a majority woman business. It says the investment gains of women topped their male counterparts by most of them at 0.4% last year, according to an analysis of more than 8 million clients' accounts at Fidelity. Similarly, an analysis of 14 million employer retirement accounts that are serviced by Fidelity found that women saved 9% of their paychecks in 2016, while men set aside 8.6% for their golden year. So apparently, according to this latest survey, just by a slight little bit, women are doing a little bit better.
But you know what? I believe it. I believe it. Because think about how women shop. Women will see something, right? They see something, they'll go past it the first time. Then they start doing a little research on it and checking it out and getting the reviews and all this other stuff before they actually, especially if it's something, a major purchase. They do some research on them things, man, and then they say, you know what? All right, now I'm ready to go ahead and move forward with this purchase. Men, we go in the store, we know what we want to buy, we see it, we grab it, we go. We don't even know if the shit works. We just get it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And then we mad as hell when you go home and you figure, okay, that out-of-the-box TV that's 70% off, regular price, $700, now it's like $300, maybe $145, $50. So you're like, man, I got a deal. I got this $700 TV for $150. What they didn't tell you is the cord frayed on the back. So you got that out-of-box special.
See, I can't talk because I'm sitting here right now on my couch, and right next to me on my couch, I got a couple of these papers that I'm reviewing with you and everything. But also on my couch is a computer. I got this computer like maybe about 2 months ago from eBay, and it was a good deal. I mean, I got it cheap, so I'm not really complaining about how much I paid because it was less than $100, and probably a whole lot less than $100. Might have been about half of that, but still, it's sitting there because what they didn't tell me was that one, it didn't come with a plug, so, and two, the battery that it had was lasted for like maybe 3 days.
The battery was on its last leg. They said you can have it, but you can have all
yeah.
the problems that come with it.
Exactly.
And
so now I took it to a couple places to say, so how much it costs to give me a battery? And by the time I was done the calculating, I was like, oh, skip it. It makes good office furniture. I mean, it makes good furniture for right now, and eventually I will go ahead and toss it, and I'll go get me another one that actually works. It might have to pay a little bit more. But
yeah,
you were right.
But
you were right up the alley with what you were saying, though, because it says that women. Here's what it says. So what characteristics help Fidelity's female clients post better returns than men? And this first one was what you just said. It says plan with purpose. Women think more holistically about their investments and build their financial plans around life goals rather than trying to beat the market. Take less risk.
Mm-hmm.
They also benefit from making fewer risk bets, such as putting 100% of their money in stocks, which tend to suffer larger price swings and bigger losses in turbulent markets than fixed income assets like bonds. Women also pick investments that are appropriate for their age and time horizon. So, like you said, they were doing a lot more of that smart kind of buying. And then last, it says they practice something that, you know, we get on them sometimes for not doing this, but they actually are a lot of times a lot better on it than we are. They practice patience. So women place fewer trades, according to Fidelity, and tend to carry out a long-term buy-and-hold strategy. Men are 35% more likely to make trades than women, Fidelity's client data analysis found. The good news is many women are taking positive steps to save and invest effectively for the future, Murphy says, but there are still many who need to do more. Taking the next step to ensure that savings are invested properly and generating growth is critical. But, yeah, like you said, a lot of them, they're not diving into it head first. They're actually thinking it through.
Yeah, they do that research, man, and they sit there and they figure this stuff out, and they do the thing, and they say, this is what I want, and this is what I want. I'm going to wait. We say, we want it right now. Let me get that right there. And then we get beat up and mad. We jump into something with the thought that scared money doesn't make money. But then again, you have to be smart about what you're spending your money on.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times, We do that in a rush because we want to get, like you said, they want to beat the market. So you figure this thing says I have 140% rate of return. I'm going to try it. What they didn't tell you was you have a 280% risk of loss.
Exactly.
It's almost like gambling.
Gambling or the lottery.
It's like gambling. You got a better chance of putting money in the lotto machine and getting a ticket and hoping that the numbers that they gave you come out. But that's why a lot of pension systems are failing now too, because instead of investing in stocks, they wanted to get the quick returns. And then when those things crash, people's pensions are stuck in the middle of that. You know, it's crazy.
Good, but that's just the way people get. They're getting to the point where they're just sitting there going like, I'm just going to take this chance, and sometimes not even researching. They're like, whatever the whim carries them that day. They're like, oh yeah, it sounds good. I'm going to invest in chocolate today. Even though chocolate might be tanking, they still going to invest in it.
Right. The chocolate is tanking. Chocolate went down. Today, chocolate, and then, you know, we don't read up after we look at it the first time. So if you see chocolate is trading at $85 a share, and you got a couple thousand, so you say, you know what, I'm going to get me a few shares of this thing right here. But then you go to sleep before the news came on. Oh, the chocolate joint is failing. It just failed. $45. Well, there's $40 a share, but you locked in at $87 a share, and then it dropped. You stuck because now one of your shares that you purchased is worth two shares.
It's shot. Gone. Don't count worth a darn. It's lost.
Right. And ain't nobody trying to buy your $85 share joint. They $40 now. I can get, for what you pay for one, I get two. And I got $5 left over to go for a third.
Yep. Now, coming back to the world of sports, you know, I do like my sports as well as some of the other stuff. I got two questions for you. One is a personal one, and the other one is more of a just the NBA and everything.
Okay.
What the heck happened to Cleveland? They were blowing everybody out. They come home, they blow Boston out, and they let Boston win one. I know it's still going to be Golden State against Cleveland in the finals, but what was LeBron thinking?
You know what? I guess, any given game, man, you look at the teams and you say, oh, they're going to blow them out. And then it's the reverse. So no one can predict what's going to happen. That dude that might have sat on the bench all season, he averaged 1 point a game because he missed the free throw and he made the other one. And then he comes out on the floor because somebody got hurt and tortured teams for 45, 50 points. So you never know what's going to happen, because none of these are predetermined. You know what I mean? So, I mean, with that, you win some, you lose some. Like we say in football, any given Sunday, man, might be the one where you take the L. So, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. They got to bounce back. You got to dust yourself off. He might not have been feeling it. I mean, you get like that, too. You get like that at work.
And they're still up 2-1, and they still got one more game in Cleveland, so they should be up 3-1 in the next game. And then they'll see. What I'm trying to figure out is whether they're going to be nice and let them win one in Boston, because they did let them win one in the first two games, and go ahead and close them out in 5, or they're going to let Boston win one in Boston and then close them out in 6 in Cleveland. But, you know, that can be a little dangerous, because then you might let them get a little too confident, and crazy stuff like what happened last year with Golden State could happen. So I think they just need to go ahead and probably try to close them out in 5.
You know what I think, though? Think about this. Every game you play, you get money. So if we up 3 games and we only need one more for a sweep, hey, man, you know what? Hey, man, I need a little bit more money. Let's go and let them win one, man.
That's what I think might happen with San Antonio today, because they're the ones that actually, because Cleveland was up 2-0, now they're up 2-1, but San Antonio was up 3-0. They're playing today, I think, in, I'm not sure if they're playing in San Antonio or they're playing in, who are they playing? They're playing, San Antonio is playing Golden State. So Golden State's up 3-0. So I'm thinking San Antonio might actually win one this time, even though they injured and they shouldn't win it, but I'm thinking, I'm like you, Durant and the boys are going to be like, go ahead, let them win one.
Let them win one, man. And then we can go over there and win in their house. You know what I mean? We can get more money because the finals are going to come. We're going to the finals. If we keep playing the good game we play, we're going to go to the finals and make more money anyway. So let our boys get a couple of more dollars and play another game. But we ain't trying to be up 3-3. So you can close them out after that, you know?
Yeah, like you said, go 5. They might let them win today, but then after that, it'd be like, nah, y'all, that was y'all one game. We gave you one game. We're not giving you any more.
Yeah.
That was it. Don't get greedy. Yeah. We're not giving you any more. But when I was at work today, I was talking. This is where it gets like to the personal side. When I was at work today, I was talking to one of my coworkers. One of them was one that's been on our show. It was Elizabeth, who's written the books that we've had on that dealt with the cancer survivor and the murder mysteries and everything. And one of her friends, Jean. Now, both of their daughters run marathons. Apparently, just running a marathon isn't good enough these days, because apparently they are now also running ultra marathons and triathlons. So, like, apparently for an ultra marathon for a woman is like about, I think she told me somewhere around 52 miles. I thought it was bad enough running 26 miles, but apparently it's 52 miles for a woman, and for a dude, it's about 100 miles. That's like you running from Newark to New York.
Wait, you said 100 miles?
100 miles.
Man, that'll get me from where I am right now into Maryland, bro. Yes, that, you know what though? They I guess it's a competition thing. You know, you want to see how far you can push yourself, and you go and you keep going and you keep trying and you accomplish that. You said, you know what? Let me go a little further. Let me go a little further. So, I mean, shout out to them because I know I'm not running.
Like I said, I ran in high school. I ran track in high school. I ran a mile in the 880. I talked about the fact that when I got older, I might want to try to run a marathon. Never got to it, but I definitely was not trying to run no ultra marathon, and now I'm not even going to try to run even a half a marathon. So, like, yeah, definitely shout out to those folks that are doing that and those folks that do those triathlons where they do. But see, what I didn't know, which I learned today, I think I might have heard about it, but I wasn't. Yeah, I think I saw one on TV. But they've also got these things because one of them, I think it was Elizabeth's daughter, it wasn't the other Jean's daughter, but it was Elizabeth's daughter. Apparently, it's not the best runner because her with something, the knees, legs, something is not in the best of shape for running. But she's a good swimmer, so she wants to take part in like a team triathlon. So you basically somebody else runs those 26 miles for you, and then you do the bicycle equivalent. Like so, let's say you do 50 miles of bicycle, and then somebody else does the 10 mile swim.
Oh wow.
But it's like
a
marathon thing. You literally pass it on. So they got to run to you, and then once they get to you and you're in the water, then you swim, and then you get out of the water, and then you hand it off to the bicyclist, or it might be in a reverse order. But it's that kind of like one leg to another.
Good gracious.
So
what?
Would you do any of that?
No, bro, I would cheer from the sidelines, you know what I'm saying?
What's the furthest extreme sport that you would do?
Sleeping.
I was going to say extreme
relaxation.
Extreme sleeping?
Yes, sir.
I might even do some extreme, you know, if I know that I can get away with it, maybe some extreme beer curls, but that's about it.
Exactly, man. I'm not good with that, you know. I'm not trying to pass out, man.
So your ancestors may have come from Kenya, but you're not trying to follow in the family footsteps, huh?
No, sir. Not at all. Not at all. Not
they couldn't pay you to do that.
You know what? I'm just like, I will cheer you on. I will post on social media a billion times for you, you know. But me do that? Nah. Extreme
not
television watching. You know.
Extreme book reading. I'm good for extreme book reading.
Extreme music listening. Movie watching.
Yeah. extreme music listening.
Yeah. I get it in. I'll probably win that. When you talk about those things that involve like really pushing and exerting yourself, I'm past that age now, bro. Like, I can't do it. It'd be a nice try, but
that's all I'm gonna do. I'm gonna give it a nice try, and I'm gonna cheer you on and be like, more power to you.
You ain't lying.
We have came up in our conversation with them, with these two friends of mine, including Miss Elizabeth, which I was wondering if y'all had them up there with coming back to the world of entertainment. We were talking about movies and how these days movies aren't just movies. They've become like, because they recognize that people can just flop in a movie at their house. I mean, I got a VCR here, so I wait for Hidden Figures to, well, it's already out, but I can go get my copy of Hidden Figures or wait for whatever the current movie is and plop it in, or get it from the Renegade Man and plop it in and watch it at the house. So what the movie houses are doing is they're going back to the dinner theater days, and they're trying to make them more like experiences. Like, we have this thing, I think it's called Silver Light or something like that, but it's like, you know, you're not watching a movie just at a regular movie place. It's almost like the old days of dinner theater. So you've got like nice fancy meal and fancy chairs, better than your own home couch. So it's becoming more like a experience. So I was wondering if they were doing the same thing up there in Jersey.
Yeah, they have one in North Jersey, man. It's actually kind of, it's nice. You know what I mean? And you go in there, you can get your beer, you can get you a meal, you know. And it's actually pretty decent, man. I like it. I like it.
Yeah, because they said they're thinking that might be the wave of the future. We're going to see more of those. Since, otherwise, folks will not be going to the old-fashioned movie theaters, because why are you going to spend, like I said, $10 on the movie and another $10 on popcorn that may or may not be good when you can do that for about a fourth of that price at your house?
Yeah, like, it, after a while, they're going to have to, when movies get released, that's going to be really, they're doing a dinner theater, but when they start putting those movies like, all right, Alien Covenant came out this weekend, we went to check it out. All right, but pretty soon they're going to have it so that you pay $15 or so. Boom, you can watch it right in the comfort of your own home. Man, it's going to take off.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to take off. It's going to take off because I know I could be in my underwear. I don't have to go to the movies. I can get my own popcorn before, you know, go get me some popcorn or whatever. And have me a good time right in the house.
Just right chill in the house. Right in the house. I mean, and you can do things that in the house during the movie that you can't do in the movie theater because you might get in trouble because the guard will come by and knock on your shoulder.
Yeah, man. Ask Pee Wee Herman about that.
Ask what?
Ask Pee Wee Herman about that, man. He didn't fare too well doing those extracurricular activities, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, he was trying to carry it way too far to the extreme because wasn't TV playing around with kids?
TV was doing all kinds of stuff, man. So, you know, he was not not really faring well.
No, Pee-wee kind of disappeared too. I don't even know. You know, Pee-wee disappeared, Elmo disappeared. Folks who did that, they kind of like, we haven't heard from them much since that time.
Bro, wouldn't you disappear too, man? I would never come back outside. Are you kidding me? That's embarrassing, man.
I think that brother that was playing Elmo, I don't even know if he's doing anything in entertainment anymore because he just kind of like totally disappeared.
Yeah, because you know what? Not a good day for you. You know what I mean? No, man. So
not a good day at.
Not.
He didn't have a good. He didn't have
bad.
A good day, and apparently it's not a good day for Confederate statues either. Because that's the other article I said. It says Confederate statues finally retreat from front view. So it says the heroes of the Confederate statues are finally disappearing from their places of honor in the South. New Orleans, just this past Friday, took down a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, the last of four monuments the city council had voted 2 years ago to remove. Again and again, the statue's defenders charged that removing the likeness of Lee, Jefferson Davis, and TGT Beauregard will erase history, but they actually distort history. They obscure the central role of slavery in the nation's bloodfests, bloodiest war, and trumpet a message that the Confederacy was noble and worthy of esteem. That's what this editorial says. So this guy's like saying, hey, wow, they should have taken him down.
Hey, man, that's what happens. You know what I mean? Like, those things are starting, like, people starting to, like, gotta take it down. I don't see any posters of Malcolm X anywhere. You know what I mean?
Nope.
And I don't see, I don't know, I don't see anything with a lot of us. Yeah, you have the Martin Luther King statues, you know, but, you know, you got a Louis Armstrong statue. That's in the airport down there when you first get
right
to New Orleans. But we don't have, like, they have all these different things. I remember going to J.E.B. Stewart Elementary School in Petersburg, Virginia, you know, and A.P. Hill Elementary School. And I'm like, all right, can we get some?
But after we get past, you just named one, after we get past Martin Luther King, every street, every city just about got one. We got one over here, too. But after you get past Martin Luther King Boulevard and Martin Luther King and Booker T. Washington, because most people got a Booker T. Washington, and I'm trying to think who else. I'm trying to think what other popular we got that are everywhere. But once you get past those two, can you think?
Yeah,
there's not that many. There's not that many Malcolm X schools or Malcolm X streets. There's not that many Christmases Addicts streets.
No, you got Malcolm X up there in New York, Frederick Douglass. You know, the statue of Frederick Douglass on the campus of Lincoln University, but then there's nothing.
Right.
And there are so many of our elders and ancestors that could garner that same recognition. And if we had that, then they'd be like, you know what? Keep your Confederate soldiers up. Well, we don't care because we got our soldiers up, you know, but we don't have that. A lot of people, like the 19th was Malcolm X's birthday, and a lot of people, I'm one of them people. I'm like, the day is the 19th of May. What does that mean? I was like, man, listen, 1925, we were blessed with someone who no one knew then, but would change how things would be viewed on both ends, you know. And it's just like, we don't remember these things. We don't keep these things alive.
I mean, it's almost a shame that those women were doing that mathematical stuff, and I alluded to the movie earlier, back in the 1960s. We just now find out about them in 2017.
Right. It's crazy. But folks, they were.
There's other people who are doing all kinds of historical stuff that we either don't acknowledge, or if we know about them, we don't give them the respect and the honor that they are due. Every city got some curious pioneers that we probably don't give half the due that they need to get.
And you know what? One thing folks do, too, that a lot of us don't do, we don't support each other. If you take it back to when you talked about the students from Notre Dame that walked out, right? Now, a faculty member from Notre Dame put this thing out and said, there will surely be negative responses to the Notre Dame graduates who walked out during Mike Pence's commencement speech today. But you should know that they are not snowflakes or sheeple. They are not entitled or intolerant. They are not disrespectful or ignorant. They are committed to Notre Dame's ethos of compassion for the marginalized and to the university's mission of fighting for social justice. And they strongly believe that everything Mike Pence represents stands at odds with that. So they chose to make a visible yet peaceful statement opposing him. I proudly stood with a number of my colleagues outside of the stadium to applaud our students for their 4 years of hard work and their powerful choice of protest in literally standing up for why they believe is right for them, for social justice and civil rights, and for Notre Dame. So when you have individuals that, let's say, if this is how you feel, and you can verbalize how you feel in a respectful way, this is, you get that support from those who have helped mold your mind, train your mind, and get you prepared to deal with life. And they supported them. And salute to Notre Dame for that, because, man, a lot of times, you know, I could just imagine that same conversation on the other end, like, you know what? You're going to walk out. No, you can't do that. You got to respect them. You got to do this. You got to do that. I ain't got to do nothing. So now they felt stuck. So the only thing they had left to do was be loud and boisterous and boo. And then you got the president standing there. We're going to mail you your graduation of diplomas. Well, you know what?
Yeah, you're right, because I guarantee you, I think I mentioned it on last week's show, or maybe it was the week before, but it was fairly recently that there was another case of another person that spoke at a university, and there were some people that protested, because actually I think it was my, somebody connected to my brother, it might have been somebody connected to, his girlfriend's, somebody connected to his girlfriend's family, but they decided not to go their graduation, and basically they might have been boycotted one. I don't know how many students decided to do it, but they graduated from a university that is known for being a very conservative university. They graduated from Liberty, you know, Jerry Falwell's university, and Trump recently spoke there, and they opted not to go to that graduation because they did not want to stand for what Trump stood for. So they opted, they said, look, y'all can send me my paper, y'all can send me my diploma, and I will gladly take it, and I will, you know, I think they, I don't even know what they majored in, but I know they have a very, they've got a couple of departments they're good in, definitely some of the social, some of the social fields and everything. So I think they have a decent sociology department, of course. They're a conservative Christian university, so they probably got some pretty good theology department, so I don't even know what they majored in, but whatever it was, they were like, yes, you can give me my degree. I would gladly try to use it to get work, but that man, I got issues with, so I'm not going to be at the graduation. Peace out.
Wow. Yeah, and people have changes of heart and all of that good stuff. I know in the New York Daily News, man, it said a neo-Nazi converts to Islam, kills roommates for disrespecting it. Now, how about that? A Florida man killed Listen, I'm going to read it. I'm going to read the title one more time. Neo-Nazi converts to Islam, kills roommates for disrespecting it. So the article says a Florida man killed his fellow neo-Nazi roommates after he converted to Islam, and they did not respect his new faith, police said. Devon Arthur, who is white, led cops to the bodies of his former friends on Friday, but not before he also allegedly held two customers and an employee of Tampa's Green Planet Smoke Shop hostage with a pistol before he surrendered. Jeremy Himmelman and Andrew Oneshot were discovered dead of gunshot wounds to the upper body and head, police said. Arthur said that he and the pair had shared a common neo-Nazi belief, but that he recently converted to Islam. The suspected killer said that Himmelman and Oneshot disrespected his Muslim faith and added that he was upset about anti-Muslim feelings globally and wanted to bring attention to, quote-unquote, his cause. It was not immediately clear how long the trio had lived together or how much time passed between Arthur's conversion and the eruption of violence. Arthur faces charges including 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of aggravated assault, and 3 counts of armed kidnapping. Authorities also said another man, Brandon Russell, had been arrested but did not mention his charges. The federal complaint seen by the Daily News Monday said that Russell was another roommate of Arthur's and that he had violated federal explosive laws. Russell had just returned from Army National Guard training on Friday to find the two dead men, according to the complaint, and was arrested a day later while driving in the Florida Keys.
Whew. Wow. That's deep. But Russell, I want to come back to something you just said, but it's somewhat related, but it's about this whole Muslim conversion thing, because we're going to tie it and loop it back around to your boy, because I'm not claiming him, but your boy Trump. He said earlier that he was talking about extremists, and these are cases of neo-Nazis, which are extremists here. But did you notice, because I noticed that one of the newspapers I was reading pointed this out, and it was an interesting point that they brought up. He's back in the whole Saudi Arabia side of the Muslim community and trying to make these big billion-dollar deals and everything, which means that he's basically back in the Sunnis versus the Shiites. The last time I checked, most of the terrorism that has been going against the U.S. was actually from the Sunni side.
Right. Wow.
Because what's his name was a Sunni extremist? The one that Obama got. You know what I'm talking about. We found him in the hills over there in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, Bin Laden.
Bin Laden, I think, was a Sunni, and as was all the people pretty much that led the attack on the World Trade Centers.
It's crazy, man.
But you know, but what it all is about with them is how can I make a bottom dollar, and also how can I say something really stupid? Because you know, the world is, these two countries have been at each other's odds forever. Meaning Israel and Palestine, and also the Sunnis and the Shiites. But Mr. Trump has come around, and he said that he's going to solve these problems. If we ever have a psychologist on this show, I want them to analyze him.
You know what? And charge the government a whole lot of money for analyzing this fool, man, because Buddy is out of control.
You totally
analyze his whole damn cabinet, man. Just analyze everybody. You know what I mean?
From Pence on down. But I must give credit to something that I heard that shocked me. Because a friend of mine mentioned it to me as I was leaving work earlier today, and it shocked the heck out of me. But the Supreme Court ruled that in North Carolina, that whole voting redistricting was a form of gerrymandering. And one of the people that spoke in favor of this rule, that, you know, so basically they were like upholding some of the rules that some of the lower courts had said, which is basically that this whole thing, y'all are gerrymandering, it's not fair to the minorities in the community, the black vote is being lost, and all of that. One of the main people that spoke in favor of this rule, and so therefore went against what we all know about him, was the king of Uncle Tom, Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas actually said something that made sense.
Clarence realized that being cool love ain't working for him, man. The ultimate cool, he got stabbed in the back by this new regime. He's like, hold up. They smack him back black. He's like, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah, you forgot, bro. He's here to remind you. So now he's like, you know what? I've been acting a fool all these years. Let me go ahead and fight for the people, man. They gave him a dose of black on. Smacked it right back in on me. He was like, well, wait a minute. They was like, nah, buddy, you might think you one of us, but you ain't down. You still a, you know. And then he like, oh, that's how y'all playing it. All these years I have given y'all, playing Steven from Django, and y'all just don't want to give me my due. They said, hell no, nah, we ain't giving you your due. Get your black ass back over there with your people.
Well, he had to wake up for a minute.
Yeah, they slapped him. He was woke after they slapped the taste out of his mouth. Like, get your ass the hell up out of here. You're not our friend. We let you believe that we were friendly to you, but there's a difference.
Exactly.
Now he's like, what am I gonna do now? Hey man, you know how black people are. We forgive them. We'll take you back, but you got to work hard though. You got to work hard for this one, bro. It's too long.
They're like, yeah, we'll forgive you, but you don't have to work hard for it.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to work extra hard for this one, buddy.
Yeah, extra they're going to work hard. And the other thing that we're trying to figure out here in North Carolina is the leader. So look out. He's coming y'all's way now, too. Because he has stepped down. The leader of the Moral Monday movement, Reverend Barber, and he's the NAACP head here in North Carolina that was leading the Moral Monday movement. He has stepped down from the state chapter because he is planning to run a national Moral Monday kind of movement. But he might be heading your way shortly because he's getting ready to make a whole bunch of noise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he stepped down. I don't think I have that article with me, but yeah, he stepped down and made that announcement. I think it was after our show last week, so I think it was like maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. He was stepping down, and he was going to be leading a national movement. So a lot of people were really pleased with the way that he came off during the Democratic convention. So who knows? He might be laying the groundwork for some national political offices as well, or he might just be like the – because it sounded to me like he was definitely planning to run almost like a the thing that King did, the war against poverty thing. So he's about to relaunch the war against poverty 50 years later.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Speaking of the NAACP, you know they parted ways with Cornell Brooks. At the end of June, he will no longer be the president, national president, of the NAACP.
Oh, wait a minute, the national president? Well, maybe that's what Barber's going for. Maybe he's going to be the national president because he stepped down from the North Carolina. So maybe that's the void that he's trying to fill. This could get really interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, it's going to be something to pay attention to and watch, and it's going to be real interesting to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, everything unfolds. Well, give the folks the number one more time. That's about be time for us to wrap it up. We've given them a lot of things to think about and ponder over, particularly around law enforcement and everything else. But give the number one more time, and who knows, maybe we're going to track a call. Because we haven't heard from our girl in a while. She disappeared on us again. I think she's having some more liquor in Hawaii.
Yeah, that number, bruh, is 646-668-8393. The voice of the people, y'all, on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of the folks that we will have, we do have next week scheduled. We have speakers for the next 2 weeks. So next week, next Monday, we will have the Reverend Carl Kenny, who, like I told you before, was involved in Ferguson. He was also involved with a lot of civil rights stuff here in North Carolina. So he has been an advocate of everything from supporting some of the folks that were dealing with Black Lives Matter issues, as well as what was happening in Ferguson a few years ago, Ferguson, Missouri. And he's also been involved in LGBT struggles here in North Carolina, being a supporter of folks in that community and the rights that they have been struggling for as well. So he's been at the front lines for many years. He's also written a book, a fictional book, two of them, and they kind of like look at the whole ministerial thing and some of the facts that they are also humans and some of the trials and tribulations that they have to go through even with their congregation. So, you know, it's a couple of books that he's put out, and they touch on the fact that sometimes those ministers get into the worldly side of the world as well. And even though the book is fictional, he will acknowledge that it is based on some of the things that he went through in his own life, with people kicking them out of one congregation because of views, and also some relationship situations that he got into. So he will definitely be an interesting person to talk to. And the following week, I know everybody will want to hear from Mr. Wheeler, who is teaching kids how to fly airplanes, having been an early African-American pilot on, I believe it was either Piedmont or American, but one of those two airlines. But he will be here talking about what it was like being one of the few minorities that are a pilot, and how there seems to be less of us flying planes now, but he's trying to change that. So there was like a crop of folks that came in with him, like I guess around the 60s and everything, when we were starting to get progress in different fields. And then, you know, it's one of those fields that we've been kind of backing out of, but he's hoping to change that, and hopefully we'll see more of an increase of black pilots. And he'll be talking about that, as well as just some of his own business acumen and history. So we've got two fascinating fascinating guest coming on both next Monday and the Monday after.
Nice. Nice. That's what's up, man, and being able to talk to a pioneer in that aviation industry as far as us. And I want to give a shout-out to one of my fraternal brothers, Cedric Davis, who is a black pilot, you know. So, hey, man, it's going to be a nice couple of weeks coming up. We're going to have some good shows. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, any final thoughts you want to wrap up with, Mark?
No, just as we talked about many times before, and as I kind of alluded to last week, definitely, you know, this is the world that we live in, which is a very difficult world with all kinds of crazy folks doing all kinds of crazy things, and that's why more than ever we need to make sure that we have peace and love and respect and honor all of those people that are out there, no matter what their views are. Some of them we may share, some we may not share, but we need to be sure that we have a definite understanding and respect for people that have both similar views to ours as well as different views. And it's all about honoring and sharing and also being cognizant and respectful of each other.
Indeed, indeed. And as for myself, I'm just going to leave everybody with one thought. And it's act like, you know, what you do matters, because it does. And with that, that's our time for tonight, folks. You've been with Mark Lee and the Sixth Man, Dean Geronimo, on the Voice of the People. Remember, we're here every Monday night at 7 o'clock. So you can join in, blogtalkradio.com. You can give us a call, 646-668-8393. And you can also listen to our shows on the TuneIn app, TuneIn, and come join in the conversation with us. So that's our time for tonight. Peace and blessings, y'all. We see y'all next week.
All right, peace.
Check us out on the TuneIn app. We appreciate you.